Fans back here with Ray Fossey, who I could tell you I could talk baseball all night with Ray. Of course, he's the part of the broadcast team with the Oakland A's, a long major league career. 50 years, Ray, in the big leagues. 1970, yep. As you say, was when you got married to Carol. But you were up in the big leagues in 67, so it's been a long, long career for you.
Marty, I've been blessed. I remember just hearing people talk about how blessed we are. If you can stay in the game of baseball, Bob Uecker, who's going strong, what, mid-80s, he said, I've never worked a day in my life. The late Don Zimmer, I think he took one paycheck outside of baseball, and he felt badly, gave it back, and he said, I can't take it. I think it was construction. He got back in baseball, and he was there his whole life. So, you know, I love baseball, as you well know, as you love baseball. And to have played the game and now continue to broadcast it for the Athletics, to be a part of the A's organization as long as I have is tremendous. And, you know, I'm totally blessed, and that's why I hope baseball does get back. And I talked to Vin Scully a little bit earlier this week, and here's our idol for everybody who has been a broadcaster, and I'm sure you as well, to listen to the great Vin Scully. But, you know, it's just a tremendous game, and to, again, be able to have played the game, and now to broadcast. I'll be honest, Marty, I've said it before. I'll look down on the field and I'll say, did I ever play this game? But these guys are good. You know, seriously, they're very good. It's a different time, and I think the advancements of a lot of things have helped the players today. And I wouldn't change one time, one bit. I saw it was Carl Yastrzemski's, was it 59 years ago? He took over left field. I think I just read that. And one of the greats, Carl Yastrzemski, playing for the Boston Red Sox. Never won a World Series. Of course, his grandson now playing for your Giants, and we know the story behind that as well. But it's been a great game. I had the opportunity to play against some great players, many of whom are in the Hall of Fame right now. And, you know, it's been a fun life so far.
Boy, Jerry Coleman always said the same thing, Ray. He said the players today are bigger, stronger, faster, but we had more fun. And that's what Jerry always always told me about.
Yeah.
But there's something
to be said about that for sure.
All right. Al Kaline, Ray, passed away this week. Mr. Tiger, wonderful, glowing tributes. You played against him. You knew him for his entire, almost your entire baseball career, really. Your thoughts about Al Kaline?
Well, unfortunately, I'm sure we don't have enough time, but I'll try to get it encapsulated as quickly and as fast as I can, whatever. But, you know, it started really in 1971. He had played for the Tigers in 68 in the World Series, his only World Series. Jim Price, who now broadcasts for the Tigers, was the catcher. He had replaced Bill Freehand. And Al Kaline, I've said it before, that when he came to the plate, our pitcher had knocked down, I think, three guys, which it wasn't intentional. He just couldn't throw strikes. And I said a little prayer, dear Lord, don't let him hit the franchise. Because Al Kaline was the franchise. The ball came out, hit the dirt. Marty, can you imagine someone as I did? I picked him up. I helped him up. I dusted him off. I'm the catcher of the opposing team. Because I'm thinking, I know what's going to happen. And unbeknownst to me, Greg Nettles, our third baseman, looked into the Tigers' dugout. Billy Martin, who managed Al in the last three or four years of his career, was pointing at Bill Dennehy, who in turn came up to pitch against me leading off the inning and drilled me in the side. And unfortunately, as my lovely wife says, why do you always charge the mound? Because you always come out bleeding. Well, I came out bleeding big time in that one when I charged the mound. But it was Al Kaline who kind of started it. But the next year, Marty, Carol and I are going to Puerto Rico to play in the American Airlines AstroJet Golf Tournament. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it. But we arrived at the airport in Puerto Rico, and there's Luis and Al Kaline. And Al said, hey, you're here for the golf tournament? Yeah. You want to take a taxi with us? I said, oh, okay. You know, with the Hall of Famer? Sure. So we took this ride, and I'll never forget the words from Louise at the time, because Carol and I had just been married a couple of years, and Louise Kaline said, all the young people, you know, because that was, you know, he played, what, one more year? And that, you know, that was pretty much it after, well, 72, they lost to the A's in the division series, the league championship series in game five, so he didn't go to the World Series. But, you know, it was short-lived after that. But to see him over the years at Tiger Stadium and now Comerica Park, something happened this last trip. Chris Townsend went. Ken Korak did not make that trip, your good friend. But Chris Townsend did. Al Kaline walked into the radio broadcast booth And he simply said, "Hi, I'm Al Kaline," like nobody knew. He said, "I'm Al Kaline. If you guys have some baseballs you want me to sign for charities, let me know. I'll sign anything you want." Mm-hmm. And Chris Townsend to this day keeps talking about, can you imagine, here's a guy that everybody knows, especially in Detroit, and he walks in introducing himself. But a tremendous person, and I remember talking to him just this past summer, and, you know, just, there's nobody better than Al Kaline. And, you know, Mike Myers, who is now assistant to the Players Union.
Yes.
He's a left-hander, the stylish left-hander, dropped down. Do you know it was Al Kaline who said to him on an airplane flight, they were in the back of the plane, and Al said to Mike Myers, he said, "You know, Mike, you're just a typical left-handed pitcher. You have to change your delivery to do something different." And to this day, Mike Myers talks about that. When he dropped down a little sidearm and all of a sudden became a specialist left-handed pitcher, because of, here's Al Kaline, one of the great hitters and defensive players in baseball, giving him some advice as a pitcher. And Mike Myers went on to have a tremendous career and played a lot of years in the big leagues. And speaking of defense, I was just thinking that Al Kaline, if you go to Comerica Park, which I hope people do when they do go to downtown Detroit, they'll see Al Kaline. It's not of him hitting over 3,000 hits, but him making a tremendous catch in right field. And that says a lot about the complete player that Al Kaline was. The complete person is enough said. There's nobody better, nobody kinder than Al Kaline, and he is going to be sorely missed when this game resumes and people at Comerica Park pay their tribute to one of the greatest.
Boy, absolutely. Beautiful tribute by Ray Fossey to a good friend and a Hall of Famer, Mr. Tiger, Al Kaline. Very good, yeah. Ray. That was a good story. Hey, Ed Farmer. You know, we touch upon all these names. Ed Farmer passed away this week, broadcaster for the White Sox. You knew him so well. But he also was a pitcher, and he was a good relief pitcher in the late 70s. And, Ray, you know me, and the two of us, I think we've been combined, probably interviewed more people than anyone in the history of baseball. I'll tell you, I still never catch up to you, but I did go in the archives, Raf and I, and came up with about 4.5 minutes with Ed Farmer, and Ed Farmer telling a great baseball story, really, of when Ed was a pitcher and Al Cowens, who was an outfielder for the Royals and the Tigers, was a hitter. So, Ray, I want to play this for you, then get your reaction to Ed Farmer. So, Raf, go ahead. Let's hear Ed Farmer talking about his incident with Al Cowens.
Marty Lurie here on this day in baseball history with Ed Farmer. Ed, a pitcher with Chicago 1980. And you have an incident with Al Cowens of the Kansas City Royals. Gets to be somewhat publicized. Lawsuits are threatened, filed, and feuds go on. Tell me this story.
What happened in 1979, Marty, is I was pitching for the Texas Rangers, and Al Cowens was at home plate. Jim Sundberg had called for a fastball in the outside corner, and Al Cowens called timeout and looked down. That's something a hitter never does. He looked down to see where the catcher was sitting when he called time. And Sundberg changed the location of the pitch and wanted the fastball inside rather than away when Cowens got back in the batter's box. And I threw a fastball in. Cowens went out to get it on the outside corner. I fractured his jaw in three places. What happened the next year when he came back, he was with the Detroit Tigers, not the Kansas City Royals. He hit a ground ball to short and ran halfway to first and then started running towards the mound. Well, I had my back to him. I was watching the play. And I said to the shortstop, "Throw the ball. Let's go." You know, something like that. And the shortstop double pumped and they threw it. And he goes, "Look out." So I took a look over my right shoulder and I saw a gray jersey coming. And I instinctively turned very quickly and Cowens was throwing a punch and I ducked. When I ducked, I thought he would come over around my right side. So I took my right elbow and I was going to hit him somewhere in the head or in the neck. And he wasn't there. He had come around to the left side of me, reached around and put his pinky finger in my right nostril and then put me in a bear hug. And both benches emptied, and the fight lasted about 20 minutes. I remember Lance Parrish having me in a bear hug, and there was no way I was going to get away from him. He was a massive individual with a lot of muscle. Couldn't get away from him. And I think the most unusual thing was, as we were all fighting on the field, Al Cowens was sitting in the dugout. The fight went on, and Al was sitting in the dugout. I came in after the game. Bill Vack was irate. I was leading the league in saves at the time and was going to the All-Star game. And he said, "I want you to sign this paper right here. It's a lawsuit for Al Cowens." So I signed the paper, and Al Cowens had to be taken out of town, and I had to go before a judge the next morning and get the writ or whatever they had to stamp. And it went on after that. Lee McPhail was president of the American League at the time. He came down and he said, I hope this Cowan stuff is over. I said, I think maybe one more hit and that will be suffice. He goes, if you hit him, then I'm going to suspend you. And I said, you have to do what you have to do, Mr. McPhail, and I have to do what I have to do. And we went to Detroit, played a doubleheader in Cleveland. I saved both games of the doubleheader and was taking out the lineup card. And we're going to Detroit, and the people, newspapers and TV, they were making a big thing out of this feud that was going on. I call it the longest running feud in baseball. It was like the McCoys and, you know, and the Hatfields. And, I mean, it was ridiculous after a while. And I was sitting in the clubhouse in Detroit, and Joe Falls was a writer in Detroit and across the country, and noted writer, came in and he said, what's going on with you? And I said, not much. I had to stay at a different hotel because I had death threats. I had FBI agents with me. And he said, I noticed you brought the lineup card out the last 3 days in Cleveland. You have a win and two saves. I said, well, the team's won 3 games. That's why I'm bringing it out. He goes, are you bringing it out tonight? I said, absolutely. He said, this is going to be a hostile crowd. I said, I can't do anything about the crowd. All I can do is take the lineup card out, and when they call me to pitch, I'm going to pitch. So I took the lineup card out, and Al Cowans came out, and he said to me, I want to apologize for what has happened. I said, you know something, Al? I'm bigger than what is going on here, because the game is what's really happening. And he said, I apologize for that. I said, you know what? All I want to do is play baseball. You get in there tonight. I'm going to pitch you as tight as I can. I'm going to pitch you as hard as I can. I'm not going to give in to you, and if you get hit, you get hit, but I'm not going to hit you intentionally. We both know that I didn't hit you intentionally the first time. You got hit because you were looking back to see where the catcher was, and then you went out to get it, and it got you. So don't blame me for your mistakes. We shook hands, and that was it.
Oh, what a story. Baseball lore. This is what makes the game the great game it is. And, you know, but you become friends afterwards, you know, and it, you take the game on the field and it's so competitive. But after that, things do work out.
I think that's the way it should always be. What happens on the field happens on the field. Sometimes we take those things too seriously and we take those home with us. And as a fan, as a broadcaster, as a former player, we live vicariously through the guys in the locker room, and once they leave, we should leave also.
Well, Ed Farmer, great story, great recollection of an interesting incident in baseball history, and that's why we do the show. Thanks so much,
Marty. Great being with you.
All right, Ray, that was Ed Farmer, your friend, talking about that story. What do you think of that?
Well, I can understand exactly what he's talking about, because you know you'll see catchers, and if you do a close up of a catcher in a game, he's looking up at the hitter as he's given the sign. Well, he should be more concerned about location, which Al Cowans obviously wanted and figured for pitches outside. See, I think that's where if a hitter knows location, he has better success than knowing what the pitch is. But typically what happens there, and you know, it's like the sign-stealing thing. You know, you just simply stand up, and, you know, the catcher, Sundberg, saw it, and so did Ed Farmer. And so that's why they changed the location, went inside. But you'll see hitters dive to the outside part of the plate, guessing, assuming the hitter's going to, or pitcher's going to throw in that location. So any pitch that's thrown inside, it seems like it's right at their head, many of which are really strikes. But because they're diving over the plate, they come in and then they back off like, what are you trying to do, throw at me? Well, no, I just have to have both sides of the plate. But I'm not surprised. See, Ed Farmer, I caught him when we were at Cleveland together. And down in Tucson in High Corbett Field, and I would always tell Ed, I said, Ed, if you could drop a few miles off your fastball and have better control, you're going to be a tremendous pitcher. Well, he became that with the Chicago White Sox. It could not have been better because he grew up on the South Side. He played for the White Sox. He becomes an all-star closer for the White Sox. I mean, everything worked perfectly. But I'll tell you one thing about Ed Farmer, Marty, he could eat. They had a big you've heard of the Pinnacle Peak, which no longer exists in northern.
Yes, of course I have. Yeah,
you know, a great steak place. Well, they had one in Tucson that was called the OK Corral, and it's the same thing. The ties, the cut off ties, and the whole thing.
Right.
Ed Farmer ate 2 32-ounce steaks in one sitting, 32 ounces. They were called the Cowboys, and he said, give me a Cowboy. Give me another Cowboy. I said, Ed, what are you doing? So every time I'd see him, I would say, hey, eating Ed. And Ed Farmer, Marty, the great thing about Ed Farmer, I mean, we talked about the class of Al Kaline. The thing about Ed Farmer Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the White Sox, called Buddy Bell, who worked for Jerry. Buddy worked for him for years, and he was so loyal to Jerry because Jerry's so loyal to all of his people that Buddy did not want to leave. So he ended up going back to Cincinnati, where his father, Gus Bell, and his now son, David, managed the Cincinnati Reds. So he goes back there. He's working for the Reds. Buddy called me the day before Ed passed away, and he said, I just got a call from Jerry Reinsdorf, and he said that Ed's not doing well. Well, a comment from Jerry Reinsdorf. Here's the owner, the chairman of the Chicago White Sox, Chicago Bulls. His comment was, I lost a very, very good friend. And that was Ed Farmer, not just with Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, all the way down to the workers in the stadium. And I still call it Comiskey Park. I know it's got another name. But, you know, I would see, and we'd be driving, and I'd be with in a golf cart with Eddie, and we'd be going, and all these people, hey, Eddie, how you doing? How you doing, Eddie? And it was from everybody, the security guards, the concessionaire people. Just everybody loved Ed Farmer. And like Al Kaline, when baseball resumes and there's a moment of silence for Ed Farmer, there would be a lot of tears shed by not only people like Jerry Reinsdorf in the front office, but also the people, the real working people. And those are the people really more concerned about right now because of what is happening. Because those people, I know in Oakland and San Francisco, I think it's the same people work both venues. So they're working straight for 6 months. And so they need this time to be working. But I think, and I've seen it, in Ed Farmer in Chicago, they're going to love him. They're going to miss him royally and just a tremendous person. His broadcast booth is called Ed's Deli. Because we would walk in, like the press rooms. And, you know, some have good food, some don't. And Ed Farmer would say, don't go down there to eat there. What do you want to eat? And Ed would call down, have his engineer and radio call down. And all of a sudden, Glenn Kuiper and I'd be in our booth, and here comes this big plate of fruit or sandwiches or cookies or whatever it might be, all from Ed's Deli. I mean, he was amazing. So he'll be missed, not obviously from that, but just the fact that he's a great person. And, you know, interviewing him and hearing him talk in that interview with you, Marty, I could just visualize him talking. He knew everything that happened. I mean, just to the detail, and not surprising just to hear him talk that way. And he's going to be missed. We're going to miss him for sure because a great person. And I know he's healthy. He had a kidney transplant in 1995. And, you know, he just kept going. You would never, ever, never, ever know that anything was wrong with Ed Farmer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Mike Kruko is going through some issues with his leg. You talk to Mike. How you doing, Mike? Everything's great, you know. And we know with Mike, and the same with Ed Farmer, you just don't talk about stuff like that because you know that they're giving their best and they love the game that they're doing. And it's unfortunate that we're going to miss Ed Farmer, but even happier to know that Mike Kruko is still there.
Boy, great, Ray. Boy, what a pleasure. We'll do this again. Yeah, we'll do this again. Wonderful, wonderful stories about Al Kaline, Ed Farmer. And yeah. Two things. One, I miss the luncheons where you and Kruk would go at it. Yeah. I do. Yeah. I miss those of the Bay Bridge luncheons.
But it's in good fun.
Of course. No, I understand.
He's one of the greatest guys in the game. And the Giants are fortunate to have him. And whatever it takes. And I know NBC Sports, you probably heard and read what they were going to do with putting him in the studio.
Right.
With Dwayne doing the games, I think, in San Diego, Arizona, LA. And Los Angeles. Yeah, and do that. And so that's how much he's loved and respected, that they were going to make these accommodations. So I'm happy for him. I'll be happier when we're all back to baseball, as I know you will be. And I look forward to those luncheons. And always great to see you and talk to you, Marty, because you know what? For your tremendous career that you had before baseball, that says a lot about how much you love this great game. So very happy for you, and it's always great to talk to you.
Well, I appreciate it. And if Ed Farmer was sending you anything, it was a cheesecake. I know that.
Listen, Ed.
You're
Ed
a
Farmer,
legend.
Listen,
you're a legend, Ray.
He's the best. Yeah, right. We'll be best. So
you're a legend. You know that. You're a legend.
You're a good. Right. You're a good friend, Marty, and the best to you to the holidays. And I look
Thanks,
forward to
Ray.
Seeing you and. And Raph doing a great job is your, I guess, do we call him an engineer? I'm going to call him a producer, right?
He's the producer.
Producer. Yeah. Producer. Because I said that one time to John Trinidad, and he said, Ray, I'm not an engineer, I'm the producer. So I kind of knew that. Michael Baird in our booth is the engineer, but I know Raph does a great job for you. And you must feed him great because all I hear about is you bringing food in. So whatever it takes, keep him happy because he does a great job.
Thanks, Ray. All right. Have a good weekend. Thanks, okay. Ray, so much. All right.
Thanks,
more coming up right after this.